My name is Kiran Srinivasan. I'm from NetApp, so I'll be presenting IDDupe. It's a technique for inline deduplication for primary workloads. This is joint work with Tim Bisson, Garth Goodson, and Kaladar, all from NetApp. First, I'll provide some overview or a context for our work. Shown here is a typical storage hierarchy in an enterprise data center. You have storage clients, which talk NFS, SIFS, or iSCSI to a primary storage system. And then the primary storage system is associated with secondary storage, which talks NDMP or some other backup protocols. In this hierarchy, dedupe techniques have been exploited heavily in the secondary storage space. And dedupe savings of greater than 90% are not uncommon because of the characteristics of the workload. However, with primary storage, it has some unique characteristics. First, performance and reliability are the key features. Okay? And the protocols used are typically very latency sensitive. So given these requirements, deduplication has always been considered as a background or an offline feature. Our work, IDDupe, is specifically targeted in this space. It aims to bring deduplication or storage efficiency to the same level as the other features, performance and reliability, for primary workloads. IDDupe is an inline or a foreground dedupe technique targeted for primary workloads. And with the right configuration, it can have minimal impact on latency sensitive workloads. Some more additional background information. So since this is very important, we can classify dedupe techniques in two ways. One is offline dedupe, which is the first copy on stable storage or the permanent place of rest is not deduped. Dedupe is done as a post-processing or a background activity. With inline dedupe, dedupe is done before the first copy is stored on stable storage. So for primary workloads, this implies that latency should not be affected because that's inline. For secondary workloads, the key concern is that deduplication happens at the same rate at which data is coming in or the ingest rate, so it's more throughput sensitive. The next big question is why inline dedupe for primary? First, with inline dedupe, provisioning or planning is much easier. This is a very key concern for many enterprise data centers. Because dedupe savings are seen right away, so planning for capacity is much simpler as the values are always accurate. Okay? The next big advantage is there are no post-processing activities to do now. So you don't need to schedule background processes for deduplication. And because there are no background processes, there's no interference with front-end workloads. And for some customers, they have very limited maintenance windows, so they don't have time to run your background process. The third big advantage is that inline deduplication inherently is more efficient in terms of resources. With offline dedupe, you have both extra reads and extra writes, which are not there in the case of inline dedupe. So you're more efficient in terms of disk bandwidth with inline dedupe. The second big advantage is the buffer cache with inline deduplication is inherently deduped, so it's much more effective. Okay? So now, in spite of all these advantages, inline deduplication has not been applied in the primary context. And we believe it's because of some key significant performance challenges. And these challenges are overheads in terms of both CPU as well as IOs, and they hurt both reads as well as writes. Okay? So this is where IDDupe comes in. The following are the key features of IDDupe. First, it minimizes inline dedupe performance overheads. It does so by leveraging workload characteristics. It eliminates almost all extra IOs due to dedupe processing. And third, our technique imposes very little overhead on CPU. The second key feature of IDDupe is we have introduced a sort of tunable trade-off between dedupe savings and performance. IDDupe is a selective deduplication technology, so there will be some loss in dedupe savings if we can gain something in terms of performance. Last but not least, IDDupe can be combined with any other offline technique. So it maintains the same data structures as a normal file system. So if you're not happy with the amount of deduplication that you've got with IDDupe, you can always run an offline technique later. But it's optional with IDDupe. In relation to prior work in disk-based deduplication systems, if we classify work along two axes, one along workloads, primary or secondary, and the other axis is the method used, whether it's offline or inline, you can see that there's almost an exclusive focus on inline deduplication for secondary storage. There are some interesting products as well as very successful products in the offline and primary case, but as you can see, there's very little published work targeting inline dedup for primary storage. A point to note is there are file systems like ZFS which have deduplication, inline deduplication as a feature within their file system, but we didn't include that here in this picture because at least it was not clear whether they have modified or changed their technique to be optimized for latency-sensitive workloads. With this, the rest of the talk is as follows. First, I'll present the challenges with inline deduplication, the performance challenges. Next, I'll present our approach to solving these problems. Later, I'll present some design and implementation details of our prototype. Next, I'll present some results of our evaluation, and I'll conclude with a summary. Going on to challenges. As I mentioned before, there are challenges both in the read path as well as the write path. First, we'll cover the read path and then the write path. First and foremost, most primary workloads are typically read intensive. The usual ratio is between 70-30. So no matter what, inline deduplication must not affect read performance. It can affect write performance a little bit, that's okay, but read performance should not be affected. The key problem with inline deduplication and reads is that deduplication inherently causes disk-level fragmentation. The application tries to write out sequentially, then the file system performs deduplication, the blocks are scattered all over the disk, or maybe over multiple disks, right? Next, when the application performs sequential read, it's expecting sequential read performance, but actually the sequential reads have turned random, like as shown in the picture, right? Which leads to more seeks and more latency. This is the fundamental problem that we are trying to solve here. And as we have already seen, primary protocols like SIFS, NFS, iSCSI, they're very latency sensitive. Okay? How much of fragmentation there is a workload or a data set property. Different workloads have different amounts of fragmentation. So this is the primary challenge that we're going to focus on. On the write path, the bottom picture you can see the typical pipeline in an enterprise storage system for writes. So the client writes, it's logged onto some place, right? And at a later point in time, the file system does allocate blocks on disks and then it performs disk IO. Now if we introduce inline deduplication into the pipeline, you can see there are two new stages have been added. The first stage, you need to compute the hash of the block, and the second thing is the dedup algorithm itself. Both of these stages require extra CPU cycles, and they cause overheads. Okay? Other than this, because of the dedup algorithm itself, the dedup algorithm usually uses a data structure on disk. People call it by different names. We call it here the dedup metadata or fingerprint database, which keeps a mapping. It's sort of a lookup table, which keeps a mapping between a block's content hash and its location on disk. This table, given the number of blocks, is so big, typically people keep it on disk. Okay? So as part of deduplication, in the dedup algorithm, the algorithm would refer to this data structure on disk. So that causes extra IOs. And because it's a data structure, maybe a hash table or a B tree, there are pointer traversals and they can lead actually to random seeks. So it's not just extra IOs, it can lead to extra random IOs. Okay? So that's one source of overhead. Another point is with deduplication, blocks are shared. So you need to keep track of reference counts for blocks to maintain integrity of the file system. Typically, that's also stored in another data structure or a lookup table, and that's also kept on disk. So that's, and that needs to be updated inline if it's inline dedup. So that causes extra IOs. With this, I'll explain our approach to solving both of these problems. The first question we asked ourselves, there's no free lunch. I mean, you can't get performance and dedup savings. You have to give one for the other. So the next best question is there a good trade-off between capacity savings and performance? This is the higher level question we asked ourselves, which led to our first insight, which helps with the read path problems. What if we deduplicate sequences of adjacent disk blocks only? So if there is a block here and a block there which we can deduplicate, we don't do that. We always look for sequences of disk blocks, and only when we find a reasonable size sequence, we deduplicate. So this should solve the fragmentation problem, right? So the picture that we saw before gets transformed to the picture below. You still have some seeks between the sequences, but the cost of these seeks are sort of amortized over a bunch of blocks. It's no longer for every block, right? So this is a selective deduplication technique which leverages spatial locality in duplication. Some workloads will have this, or some data sets will have this, some won't. Okay? So the next question is, how big of a sequence is good enough, right? Longer the sequence, less the fragmentation, but less the dedupe as well, right? So in our system, the minimum sequence length is a configurable parameter. So moving on to the write path, the CPU overheads are hard to solve. I mean, there's no other way. I mean, you have to incur that cost. So the next question we have on the write path is, can we reduce the dedupe metadata IOs, or the IOs we have to do for the fingerprint database? The first knee-jerk reaction is, can we put this on flash? Can we keep the data structure on flash? Well, read IOs are cheap, but then we are looking at primary workloads here. 70% are unique blocks. Maybe you'll get around 30% of deduplication here. So there'll be a lot of updates to this data structure. Even if it's flash, the frequent updates are expensive. This led to our second insight, which is, what if we keep the dedupe metadata or the fingerprint database, a subset of it, entirely in memory and handle it as a cache? With this, we have no extra IOs. And if there are temporal locality characteristics, then we leverage that. Again, because we are only caching a subset, there is some loss in deduplication. Okay? As the picture shows below, a specific time window is looked at, and then it's like a rolling window, sliding window, and only blocks within that time window is considered for deduplication. With these two techniques, there is a question of viability. We started off with a dedupe ratio, which by itself is not very high, with primary workloads around 30%, right? If we leverage spatial locality to help with writes, there's some loss in deduplication. If we combine that with the temporal locality cache, then you lose some more dedupe. So the question is whether this is viable, right? Is this loss in dedupe savings okay? A point to note is both these properties, both spatial as well as temporal locality properties, are workload dependent. So it could be viable for some, it might not be viable for others. What we have observed is that for important primary workloads, there is significant spatial and temporal locality which can get us significant dedupe savings. Yeah. Next, I'll move on to some design and implementation features of our prototype. The iDedupe architecture is shown here. So this was implemented in a NetApp enterprise class storage system. You have IOs coming in, both reads and writes from the top. It gets logged onto NVRAM. And at a particular point in time, which we call as D stage, these blocks are processed by the iDedupe algorithm. It leverages the dedupe metadata maintained in memory for this purpose, figures out sequences of duplicate blocks, and then hands it off to the file system. The file system, which is Waffle in this case, allocates unique blocks, and for the duplicate blocks, it just fixes the metadata. Okay, very simple. With iDedupe, given our insights, there are two key tunable design parameters. First is the minimum sequence length. We call it the threshold in our work. So it's the minimum number of sequential duplicate blocks, adjacent blocks on disk, to form a duplicate sequence. It's a data set property again. Ideally, you would want to set this number to the natural or expected fragmentation that you see with that workload. It's hard to figure out, but something if you know, then you can set it to the expected fragmentation of a given workload. This is different from a larger block size, because larger block size is a fixed value, fixed amount, whereas what we are proposing here, it's a minimum sequence length. So a sequence length of minimum, a threshold of 4 implies we will deduplicate sequences of 4, 5, 6, and anything higher. What this presents, this threshold, presents as a knob between performance, which in this case is reflected by fragmentation, and deduplication. Higher the sequence, higher the threshold value, lower the dedupe savings. The next tunable parameter we have is the size of the fingerprint database cache. Right? This again is a workload property. If we increase the cache size, that leads to a decrease. We are consuming memory, so it decreases the buffer cache of the file system. So again, this is a tunable parameter between performance, which in this case is the buffer cache hit ratio, and dedupe savings. Okay? The idedupe algorithm itself works in four phases for every file. In the first phase, we identify blocks for idedupe. Only full, pure data blocks are processed. Metadata blocks, special files completely ignored. In phase two, which is a per file operation, we try to figure out the duplicate sequences. Okay? And this leverages the dedupe metadata cache. And we keep track of multiple sequences, which can happen. Phase three, we do sequence pruning. Some of the sequences might be less than the threshold. We need to get rid of them. And some sequences might overlap with each other. So we keep only the ones that are really promising or those that are longer by means of a heuristic. In the last phase, once we have identified the sequence, we deduplicate it. Among the four stages, phase two and phase three are where most of the complexity is and which consumes a lot of CPU cycles. I won't go into any details on those phases. You can read the paper. I mean, we have explained it in quite some detail in the paper. Moving on to evaluation. So evaluation setup is as follows. We use NetApp FAST 3070 system. It's a mid-range enterprise storage system. It has 8 gigs of RAM. And the file system that we use uses 3 disks and uses RAID 0 as a RAID policy. We evaluate our prototype using 2 real-world production SIFS traces that we have collected from our data center. They were collected over a period of 1.5 months in 2007. We have 2 different sets of traces. One set, which we call as the corporate trace, consists of business applications and a storage system that was used by the corporate departments like sales, HR, marketing folks. The second trace is the engineering trace, which contains engineers, home directories, documents, code, etc. Both of these are very realistic primary workloads. And as you can see from the size, they are pretty big traces as well. To compare idedupe or our system, so the baseline is a system with no idedupe, okay, and no deduplication of any sort. And the other comparison point is threshold of 1, which is a system with full dedupe, which is a minimum sequence length of 1. Okay? For the dedupe metadata cache size, we have 3 sizes of 0.5 gig, 0.25 gig, 0.5 gig, and 1 gig. A dedupe metadata cache size of 1 gig is big enough to hold all the metadata needed for our trace. Okay? So point is, if you have a threshold of 1, and if you have a dedupe metadata cache size of 1 gig, it implies that we can get maximum dedupe out of this workload, okay, which is be equal to the offline case. So the first experiment we wanted to perform was to figure out the effect of threshold on deduplication ratio. So in the graph we see here, we have deduplication ratio on the y-axis. This is for the corporate trace. And we have varying thresholds on the x-axis for the 3 different cache sizes. As you can see, the first thing to observe is the deduplication ratio does go down with increasing thresholds. Okay? But a key point to note is, with increasing thresholds, the drop in deduplication ratio is less than linear. Okay? So which implies that there is some significant spatial locality in terms of duplication. Another point from the same graph that we can derive is the ideal threshold for this workload. An ideal threshold is the biggest threshold with the least decrease in dedupe savings compared to the maximum. And for this workload, it happens to be 4. Okay? And what we do see here is we can get around 60% of the maximum dedupe possible with this workload, with a threshold of 4. Moving on, we wanted to figure out the impact of deduplication on disk fragmentation. In order to measure this, we collected samples of block request sizes at the disk level. Typically, the file system would like to request larger and larger block request sizes. So longer the request size, less the fragmentation. A short request size at the disk level implies more fragmentation. Okay? So we collected these samples and we plotted a CDF of them. This is for an engineering workload with a 1 gig metadata cache size. A way to understand this graph is, say you draw a line at a particular request size, which in this case is 8. The baseline is the dark black line at the bottom, and threshold of 1 is the blue line at the top. If you draw a vertical line, what you notice is, for the baseline, almost 45% of requests are below a request size of 8. But for the blue line, which is threshold of 1, you can notice that almost 60% of requests are below a request size of 8. Okay? So which implies threshold of 1 shows maximum fragmentation, and the baseline, as expected, shows least fragmentation. A point to note is the other thresholds fall exactly in between the two, and it's not even linearly spaced out. In fact, they're much closer to the baseline. So for example, the line for threshold of 4 is very close to the baseline. So this really illustrates our tunable fragmentation feature with IDDUP. Next, moving on to CPU utilization. The way we measured this, we collected CPU samples every 10 seconds, and we plotted a CDF of that. What's shown here is the corporate workload with a 1 gig cache size. A point to note is, compared to the baseline, there's a larger variance or a longer tail. And this is expected because we do a lot more in the DDUP algorithm now, figuring out sequences and other things. Right? But a key point to note is, in spite of this longer tail, which is a worrisome factor, the difference in terms of mean is not much. It's around 4% between, say, threshold of 8 or threshold of 4 and the baseline, which is a good thing. Last but not the least, we would like to measure the actual impact on latency. That's why we started this whole thing. The way we did this, we measured client response times at the client side. Okay? The client round trip times are what we measured, which is a measure of latency. And we plotted a CDF of this. What we notice here is, the baseline is the dark line and a threshold of 1 is the blue line. What we notice here is, for responses that are greater than 2 milliseconds, there is a very clear difference between threshold of 1 and the baseline, which implies, because of the fragmentation effect, longer latency responses become even more longer. That's what we notice here. Okay? And the other point to also note is that threshold of 8, the latency profile is very close to the baseline. Threshold of 4 is very close as well. Between threshold of 4 and the baseline, the difference is around 4% on the mean. Okay, so in summary, inline DDUP has a lot of advantages for primary workloads, but inline DDUP has significant performance challenges as well. With reads, you have the fragmentation issue. With writes, you have overheads in both CPU as well as I/O. IDDUP creates trade-offs between DDUP savings and performance. It does so by leveraging DDUP locality properties. It avoids fragmentation by DDUPing only sequences. It avoids extra I/Os by keeping DDUP metadata completely in memory. From the experiments that we have performed with real-world workloads, we do see a very low CPU impact, less than 5% on the average, and we get around 60% of maximum deduplication with a 4% loss in mean latency. So for future work, how do you figure out a right threshold? We would like to do it in a dynamic way. That's a separate piece of work and something that we would like to follow up. And the second big thing is, we have done this for one trace or a couple of traces, one type of trace. We would like to figure out whether IDDUP is useful with other traces as well. Our traces, which we use for this work, is available, and if you guys are interested, we can share that with you. We'd like to thank a whole bunch of people for having helped us with this work. A lot of people within Waffle, our ATG team, our Shepherd, as well as our intern. So, thank you, and I'll take questions.
Hi, Margo Seltzer from Harvard. Can you pull up your graph where you had the for the different thresholds and the different memory sizes? It was the bar graph.
Okay.
So with perfect dedupe and a gigabyte, you get like 23%.
Yep.
And you end up with about 12% at 8.
I'm more like you would pick 4, you won't pick 8.
Right. Well, but your latency number was actually, if your threshold is 8.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't show the graph for 4. It's very close to the 8 line.
Okay, so you're really quoting the 4 numbers, yes. Not the 8 numbers. Okay, and the second question, can you compare what iDedupe does, how does that compare to the inline deduplication that the UCSC people did?
Oh, okay, so that's interesting. So the UCSC work was actually work done at NetApp, was done by an intern of ours. So it was the work was more to do with implementation, whereas the logic, everything was, it's the same team, the same set of people. And what we did was we got rid of, the implementation just didn't work. It was so badly written. So we got rid of the entire implementation, built it up from scratch. And then we are in a position to evaluate the system at that point in time, and we did the whole work afterwards. So that's what it relates. It's the same work.
Jody Glider from IBM. I have two questions. The first is wondering if your traces included content information, like content hashes, and if not, how you inferred content out of those traces?
Okay. It did include content hashes. Okay. So not raw content, but we had content hashes, and that's what we used to preplay.
And second question, I'm wondering for your in-memory index, whether you looked at the age of, or the average age of an entry before it was evicted because of LRU?
Ah, that's a good question. Something that I didn't mention here. So with what, when I said LRU, it's not really LRU. It's more like the blocks that have been used for deduplication get higher priority, and they move to the back of the queue. That's the policy we used.
And did you measure an age for the things that you did evict?
No.
Okay.
Vasily Tarasov, Stony Brook University. So if you do the deduplication at the primary storage, looks like during the backup when you move this data to the secondary storage, you don't need to do the deduplication within this data set again.
Yes.
Right, so I was thinking if you were able to do some kind of, calls for the backup software that can exploit the information about duplication from your system.
That's a good idea. But a point to note here is backup workloads are very different from primary workloads. You get a lot of dedupe savings in backup, in secondary storage, because people do full backups, right? So within one full backup stream, it's completely deduped, but between two full backup streams, you can find a lot of dedupe.
Right. You still need to do the duplication between different snapshots, but some of the duplication kind of already done by you.
Yes.
So I was wondering
yes.
if you can. Okay,
but the maximum dedupe they get is across full backup streams.
Ethan Miller, UC Santa Cruz. So I was looking at the traces you gathered were over 1.5 months. Did you play them back at the same speed? Did you play them back faster? The paper doesn't specify.
Ah, so we played it much faster.
Okay. How much faster? And was it a
constant? So we had a parameter on the number of outstanding IOs that you can have. Okay, we can have like 1, 10, 20, or 50. I think we used a parameter of 20 outstanding IOs at any point in time, which pretty much we have the timestamps associated with the requests, but we didn't use them at all.
So then the related question to that is, given that a lot of the problem with this is queuing delay, in other words, if you have extra IO for dedupe, you get more queuing, do you have any idea if you included that factor instead of limiting it to exactly 20, how that might impact your results?
Yes, I mean, we tried out different numbers. Between 20 and 50, we didn't see much of a difference. So we picked 20.
No, but what I'm asking is that in reality, you'll have sometimes when there's a lot of IOs outstanding, let's say 40. Other times you'll have one or two,
sorry, totally
and so the queuing delay gets bigger when there's more in the queue.
With this sort of evaluation, we don't capture the burstiness of actual data, right? And that is a concern because we do this deduplication in the destage phase, depending on how much data we have collected in the NVRAM, and that can change based on how much data has come in or not. Yeah, we haven't done that analysis.
Okay, thank you.
Jonathan Amit from IBM. Deduplication and backup is very effective. you see very high numbers, over 95-90%. On the other hand, the numbers that you are showing here are a little bit low. Is it what you expect in real life scenario in a primary storage, and is it justify such a feature of a primary storage deduplication?
Okay, good question. So what we have seen here, I think, is close to 23% as the maximum deduplication that we get. Primary workloads, it's around 30%. That's what we have seen with our customer database. But in spite of that, 70% of our customers use dedup, which means something, right? I mean, it's helpful. So there's one other point. It's not just deduplication is helpful. Primary storage is the most expensive storage. Right. If you can get 30% back, that's really good, right? Compared to backup.
Thank you.
Fabiano, EMC. I was wondering about when you delete files, have you tried to experiment on how much fragmentation when you get, like, over time, although you're taking sequences, they may overlap at different point in time, and you're going to get a lot of fragmentation because of deletions, and how do you manage that? Fragment, not only the fragmentation, how do you reclaim this space?
Yeah, that's a very good point. That's something that we want to experiment going further. One thing to note is with the traces that we collected, we didn't see that many deletes as a percentage of reads or writes in the trace. So it's hard to figure that out. Maybe we need to collect data over longer periods of time so that it contains more delete data in them, and then we can figure out.
Philip Shalane, EMC. So with the 15 to 23% savings, there's a certain computational overhead, as you discussed. If you had, instead of performing deduplication, you gave the computation to a local compressor, gzip, bzip2, 7zip, how do you think that would compare to your technique?
It's a very good point. We haven't done any comparison between compression and deduplication, but that's a very fair point.